That song, "There is a God," is by Wes King. Wes King is the brother of the gal who was my daughter Kristen's volleyball coach in college. And in that song, he writes it for his son, his little boy. I love it. I love how he kind of boils down what a loving Christian father wants his kids to be, who he wants them to be. Beauty and goodness and truth he wants them to embrace. And then he says over and over, "Believe and be saved, for there is a God." Our story today is about a father and a son. And Ben said it right. We so often make Bible stories antiseptic. I too grew up at the flannel board. And I never remember being shocked or dismayed at anything. And I don't want to shock and dismay children. I'm glad I wasn't. But this story today is shocking. This story today, if you want to spend the time finding out how much people hate this story, just type it, just Google it in, and you'll find blogs dedicated to denouncing this story. Atheist blogs, humanist blogs, they hate this story. Muslim blogs about this story where they substitute Ishmael for Isaac. This is a pivotal story in the religions of the Middle East, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. This is a pivotal story. It is a story that is at once troubling and amazingly beautiful. This is a story of beauty and goodness and truth. And it's the story of the replacing of idols. Last week I talked about recognizing our idols. Now you may not have ever thought of this story in terms of idolatry. I want us to do that today. I want to start by knocking down the lights if we could. Taking a little nap. No. Millie, will you share with us slide number one? Very famous painting of Abraham and Isaac. Pretty graphic, huh? See the knife? The boy's face covered up with his dad's massive hand. And the angel of the Lord intervening. I know there's at least one someone in here who knows who did this painting. Who did this painting? Mike? Oh, okay. Rembrandt is right. This is Rembrandt. This is done in the 17th century. I think it has a great deal of pathos to it. It's not antiseptic. At the same time that Rembrandt did this, another Dutchman did the next one. You know who did that, Mike? No. Now I'm having trouble. Jan, is it Vic? What? Oh. No, it's like a guy's name is like Victor or something like that. Or, no. Anyway, same time. And I found this one to be a little softer, isn't it? There's no knife. It's just not as severe. Then I found this one, done by a famous Jewish author. Ever see that before? You know who that is? Mark Chagall, right? Harvey? That one got me. This one got me. Abraham, and Isaac. We're going to leave that one up. There's a sentence that if you like to take notes, I'd like you to write this sentence down. And this is going to be the theme of replacing idols today. Here's the sentence. Sometimes God seems to be killing us when He's actually saving us. Sometimes God seems to be killing us when He's actually saving us. Turn with me to Genesis 22. Here's an interesting thing about that sentence I gave you. Us. Sometimes God seems to be killing us when He's actually saving us. We must understand that this story of Abraham and Isaac directly affects us. Excuse me. This is about us. Yes, it's about a pot. Excuse me. Sorry to you millions of internet listeners out there. Hey, I got something here, Bill. This story is about us. For us to understand the story of our salvation through Jesus, we must see how this story is part of that. And if we consider ourselves, know ourselves to be saved, to believe and be saved, because there is a God, this story is critical in all of that. Let's read. Chapter 22, verse 1. After these things, God tested Abraham. God puts us to the test. Because sometimes when He's saving us, He seems to be killing us. How much did Abraham love Isaac? Well, all of us who are dads know how much we love our kids. I do believe, however, that had we waited 100 years and believed that we would be childless with our wife, barren, that to be singled out by God and to be promised something frankly, ridiculous biologically, and to see the hand of God enter into our lives and produce the Son of Promise. Our son, Abraham and Sarah could say, our son is supernaturally born. And he was. And so this old man is reinvigorated by a long-standing promise that he's now seen come true. And he has been told, and this is what we must understand, he has been told that through this son, all the people of the world will be blessed. I'd like a bigger promise. Just kidding. All the people of the world will be blessed. Now, how can that be? Well, I will tell you, it's my firm conviction, I've said it a dozen times from up here, that without salvation history, without God at work redeeming throughout history, I don't believe there'd be any mercy in the world whatsoever. I believe that the common grace that we live under is in fact God's grace. And it's a part of His saving the world until His Son can reign forever and be lifted up. The special grace that we receive through Jesus, that saving grace, overwhelms it all. But we live in common grace. You see, what we don't fully appreciate is how fallen we are and how broken the world is. We only seem to appreciate that when horrible things happen to us. But we live with the promises of God that the sun will come up tomorrow and that we can live another day under His mercy. I think this story is a part of God's giving grace. And some of the grace of this story I find to be amazing when we consider idolatry. Abraham, the father of many nations, could not be that pleasing God if he was worshiping idols. And Abraham came from a place, Ur of the Chaldees, not in the Holy Land, as we call it, not in Palestine, not in what is now Israel. He came from far away, answering a call of God, and that place was a place where idols were worshipped. Alright? And he came from there, and God spends all this time shaping Abraham. But Abraham's act of faith at that initial calling is so critical, because he turned his back on those idols. He turned his back on even his family, who no doubt said, "What are you doing?" And he followed the call of God. But now this is where it gets really, really sticky. This is where I have to talk to us. You know, it is possible that those we love the most can come between us and God. It is possible that our first love, which is to be God, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your spirit, with all your strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. It is possible, in fact, it's common, that those we love the most supersede God on our loveometer. It is. And this father of many nations, Abraham, I believe this story shows us that this is what the test was all about. When God tested Abraham, God was freeing Abraham from the possibility that he had made an idol of his son. That knowing that his son was going to be an avenue for the blessing of all peoples would cause one, I think, to put one's son on a pedestal. Would it not? I mean, if that's the case, and it is, you are going to be the progenitor of blessing for all people. I would tend to favor, we see that that happened because he had this other son, Ishmael, who's not even in the picture here. He's basically sent away with his mother. We see that Isaac has become Abraham's great love. And we can identify with that and we can understand it. So what is God testing him? I think God is testing him. Well, we'll just find out, won't we? Let's see. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham," and he said, "Here am I." This is something that had happened several times. They had this little thing, "Abraham, here I am, here am I." It's kind of cool if this has happened time and again. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac. Now, isn't it interesting that he says your only son? Because he does have Ishmael. Well, what he knows is the condition of Abraham's heart, and that is Ishmael is a very poor second. Whom you love. Now, this is not, he's not saying that this is wrong here. He's just saying this is the way things are. Take Isaac, whom you adore. Take him and go to the land of Moriah. Oh, so you hear that much? Go on a little field trip, a little hike with your son. Father and son outing. Notice the images we have during our songs and on the cover of the programs of father and son. What a beautiful idea. Oh, and by the way, offer him there as a burnt offering. Can you see now why this story is so troubling? Offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Mount Moriah. By the way, most, I think, credible Bible scholars believe that Mount Moriah was and is the site of Solomon's temple in Jerusalem. You see, there just are no coincidences in God's salvation story. That the very place where sacrifice became a part of the routine of redemption in God's people is the place where this happened when it was still wilderness. Powerful. Important. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. I like what Ben said about this, because I want you to imagine the racing heart. I want you to imagine the self-talk. I want you to imagine how banter back and forth between father and son. Look over there, look over here, what, you know, whatever. And all the time, Abraham has to be praying. Trying to believe. And all the time, Isaac is trusting Abraham. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, notice the exclamation point, "My father." And he said, "Here am I, my son." Notice the same thing, God, Abraham, here I am. Same things. My father, here I am. He said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Boy's starting to wonder, we don't have everything here. Isn't it interesting that Isaac knows that a sacrifice is to take place on this journey? Here's the key thing we need to understand. I don't understand why this is the case, but it's no doubt the case. It's good, solid, true biblical theology that in patriarchal times, sacrifice was made for the forgiveness of sins. You're familiar with that. That sacrifice was made for atoning, for atonement. And we can even say that it goes further and more specifically that, and this is a hard one to sort out until we consider Jesus, that the firstborn was to be the offering for the people's sins. Think about what happened before the Exodus at Passover. If the people didn't put the blood as designated, their firstborn was going to die. Not because God is capricious, but because God demands rightly obedience. And you know, we're told that God is a jealous God. Well, does that mean He's insecure? No. It means that He understands the truth of this. There is nothing else which can replace Him. And any time we put something else in His place, it, rightfully viewed from His standpoint, is a false God has been put in my place. And that false God has no blessing. That false God cannot fill what I can fill. It cannot do what I can do. It cannot provide like I can provide. It cannot save like I can save. So through a series of times, we see that God exacts a price of sacrifice. So I don't doubt for a minute that Isaac understood that this was going to be a sacrifice to God for the remission of sin. Because these people, in their devotion to God, also understood that they fell short. And that this was something they periodically did. But Isaac also knows, hey, we sacrifice the sheep where we live. It's a ram. Abraham said, God will provide for Himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son. And maybe this is the point in the story that I see as the most emotionally difficult. When the revelation of what's going on here really is made clear to Isaac. Abraham, I imagine, walks over to Isaac and says, give me your hand. And he has some kind of a rope or a cloth. And he ties it and he says, give me your other hand. And he ties it. And what's Isaac thinking? Can you imagine? Your only son, Isaac, whom you love. And bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. Not antiseptic. Slaughter. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, here we go again. Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram. Imagine how he felt. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Oh, my. You planned this all along. My. And offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. Friends, on this Father's Day, I have a hard word for us, but it's a necessary word. If we want to be free from second place, doesn't even say it, from a diminished possibility of living with God, we have to free ourselves from idols. And those idols can take many forms. And as I've said along in this thing, sometimes those idols are good things. Our job is a good thing. Our children are a great thing. But sometimes the good is the enemy of the best. And this is a story that says that the best is to love God and trust Him with your children. Because this is what Abraham did, isn't it? This was the ultimate test of trusting God with His son. The Lord will provide. Now, I want us to quickly turn to Hebrews 11, because there's an explanation of what Abraham was thinking here. This is pretty cool. Page 1008 in our church Bible. So this is millennia later. And the writer to the Hebrews picks up this story when he's talking about great faith. Hebrews 11 is called the Great Faith chapter, the Faith Hall of Fame. Look at verse 17, Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, remember how that started? God tested Abraham. When he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Why was Abraham willing to slaughter his son? Because he believed God's promise. That he would even raise him from the dead. Because he believed that God was going to bless the world through Isaac. That, my friends, is beautiful faith. That is beautiful faith. And I can only say that the best examples of that I have witnessed in my life are those sad, sad situations when a parent has to bury a child. That I've seen parents. Well, I wanted to recall, if you can remember, maybe 15 years ago, there was a van in Chicago with a large family, and I believe all five of their children were killed, and the parents were not killed. And the guy was a pastor, and they were very strong, believing people. And I remember the media being stunned, and not that these people weren't grieving, they were broken. But stunned at their perspective. That God will raise these up. God will raise them up. And until then, we'll endure through His grace. Or I think of Horatio Spafford. It is well with my soul. We've told that story many times. How can it be well with your soul when your children have just perished at sea? It can only be well with your soul if you trust God to raise them up. If you trust God with the heartache, which isn't diminished, but it doesn't either destroy. This is believe and be saved, for there is a God. I have one more painting I want to show you. And you recall that our series that we did before this series was on Romans 8. Well, this is a verse from Romans 8. So, Millie?
Romans 8:32 tells us, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all.
The story of Abraham and Isaac is a precursor to the story of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Except in this case, there was no voice, no angel. Remember, Jesus said he could have called 10,000 angels, blown the whole thing up. But he chose not to. Why should we never worship anything in God's stead? Because the creator of the universe, the author and perfecter of faith, the one who has called us to himself, the one who has said, if you believe in me, you'll never die. That one willingly did that. And he was the Ram. He was the Ram. On that beautiful, scandalous night, we were saved. Someone asked you, when were you saved? It's really not good theology for me to say, well, I was saved on September 1st, 1968. That was a religious event in my life. That was. I was saved there. I was saved in that. I was saved then. But in the history of salvation, a father giving up his son for the love of God was shown to us by Abraham. And friends, I'm here to say we can do it. We can do it. Nothing, not even our children, not even our spouse, not even our child, not even our country, not even our wealthy, not even money, not even anything, should become an idol. Abraham walked that walk before us. And now, we are saved. For you understand that Jesus